Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and I am talking to you live from Fairbanks, Alaska. And today we have a fascinating guest, Dr. John Slade. We're going to be talking about a subject we hear about almost every day. In fact, I was talking about it with someone earlier this afternoon, and it's about climate change. But we're not going to just discuss climate change. We're going to be talking about our oceans and a few other things that people, well, we need to be more consciously and mindfully aware of our positions of responsibility regarding this. I want to welcome Dr. John Slade to the airwaves. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Now, do you mind if I call you John?
That's fine.
Terrific. Okay. John, you have a real passion for studying and researching the environment.
That's right.
You had previously done a book that I had interviewed on regarding wind power. Adirondack Green was
the
novel that you put together.
But this
one on climate change in the oceans, you did so much research on this. And I want people to know a little bit about you. You've got a doctorate in literature from Stanford University, and you've taught in high school and also in universities. You've been a teacher in not just the United States, but also in the Caribbean, Norway, and Russia.
That's right.
And you have a very positive, optimistic outlook about the future, unlike so many doomsdayers. Having a doctorate in literature, how in the world did you ever get over to climate change?
Well, I was living and teaching in Norway and in Russia, and I'm always looking for a good book that the students care about. And the great issue of today is climate change. And so I write my books for my students. I'm a teacher, yes, but I'm also a writer. And so I'm naturally writing for high school and especially college-age students, but really anybody, Donna. And living in different countries, you say I'm an optimist. It's because I'm working with these incredible students from many, many different countries. Norway is extremely international. And teaching at a university in St. Petersburg, Russia, Donna, that was the mountaintop of my career. Even though very difficult conditions, great students. So I believe in this extraordinary generation that's coming. And the big one, the big challenge, is going to be climate change. We're going to put it onto their shoulders. And the research came from many different countries, many different viewpoints, for about 10 years on climate change, at least 10 years. And with all that information, I wove it into stories, because that's my technique, Donna, to do immense amount of research and then weave it into a story. Because we all like telling me a story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, in your book, you have put together a number of different characters.
That's right. Seven sets of characters. Seven locations around the world.
Right. The first one is a young American. His name is Tom. And back from Iraq.
That's right. He's a veteran just back from the war in Iraq to a farm in Illinois. He's got a young wife and a little three-year-old boy who's dressed in camouflage just like Daddy. And he's trying to find mentally his way home. And we meet Tom on this farm now, today. And in neighboring farms out in Illinois, where I did the research, there are wind turbines going up. But Tom wonders, why are we putting up wind turbines? They're made in Spain, they're made in India, they're made in Denmark, they're made in China. don't we make wind turbines? And then Donna, for all these seven stories, after we see life in the present around the world, we come back in 20 years, and we see Tom as a veteran, 20 years older. His little boy, Tommy, is now 23. And we look at the world from two perspectives. In other words, these chapters are now in pairs. One, Donna, we really rose to the challenge of climate change. We started building these wind turbines. We provided jobs for America and for all around the world. And we're going to make it. We're going to make it. And the twin chapter is we never really rose to the occasion, and we see Tom on the farm in a drought. And that's what's coming to breadbasket America is drought. That's going to be the floods, yes, we're seeing big floods now, but primarily it's drought that's going to affect the breadbasket of America in 20 years. That's climate change.
And it's being motivated by so many components. I think people try to put everything into a tiny little box saying it's A plus E equals, you know, W, and it doesn't work out that way necessarily.
No, it is a complex situation.
It's very complex. It's very complex.
I began looking at it ecologically, but now, Donna, I live in rural America, upstate New York. People are desperate for jobs, and I see the situation economically now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did the research in Denmark, and that's the home of the modern wind turbine. They build them and sell them to the world, this little country. People have jobs. They have health care. The kids go through college with tuition paid all the way through graduate school and medical school if they want it. It's a flourishing economy, and one of the major products is no longer Danish ham and Danish butter, but Danish wind turbines.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back to this country, and we're trying to run the government, you know, until the end of next week. That's where we are. And I see that it's a matter of jobs for the whole world. And we're lagging behind. And in tandem with the jobs, Donna, when I'm in Europe, when I'm in Denmark, when I'm in Norway, a whole school system that is producing clean energy engineers. And when those kids, I call them students, graduate from university with a degree, they're not looking for a job. They've got a career, a lifetime career waiting for them in the field of clean energy. Whereas over here, the kids graduate and struggle to find anything.
Well, I think that manufacturing in this nation has taken a severe exodus out of
That's
the country
right.
due to various
That's
things.
That's right.
So the Danes are a very good example about how manufacturing contributes, and you have to deal with things accordingly. So the United States really has to wake up to that as far as the businesses go. And there's a mentality that's prevailed, and I know that there are different people in the manufacturing industry. I've spoken with some of them, and
sure.
they really want to bring things back to par. But would you
that's
know, your
right.
book, your book, let's come full circle to this.
Okay.
Dealing with climate change. Earlier today, I was talking with someone up here in Alaska because I'm up here on a business trip in Fairbanks and Anchorage. So here I am, and we're talking about Alaskan history. And part
yeah.
of Alaskan history is that this used to be an entirely tropical environment. There were areas in the middle of the United States and much of the United States as we know it today that was totally
yeah.
underwater. Totally
right,
underwater.
Right, right.
So we have shifts that occur, and you
That's
hear
right.
a lot of anxiousness because schools of fish, we have the overfishing aspect, but schools of fish that used to be predominantly in certain waters, for
yeah.
example, where the Norwegian fishermen would go out and get their tons of cod,
That's
now
right.
they've moved into Russian waters, and the Russians
That's right.
are very happy about that. Their fishing fleets are fabulous. Now, the fish made the change.
That's
People
right.
didn't make the change. The fish made the change.
Right.
So you have this, and you have this in different parts of the world. And in your book, it's almost like there's the parallel universes. You have the positive, and then you have the opposite effect that could be the negative as the result.
Exactly.
And I like your thinking, and that you say, look at these two pictures, and which one do you really want? Let's talk about your character, Michelle, who is very much into saving turtles. This is her thing. She really wants to save turtles. Tell us what motivated this story, and do you actually know someone that is in conservation for the rare species?
That's right. Michelle is a 16-year-old African-American girl, lives in Florida. She's in high school. She's a member of her church choir. She's very religious, and yet at the same time, very scientific. And at night, because the turtles lay their eggs at night, not in the hot sun in Florida, but at night, she's working with a University of Miami graduate student, and they're going up and down the beach looking for the big leatherback turtles. And they also take school groups, and in the chapter that we read, there's a bunch of sixth graders, I think they are, with the parents and teachers, and they do see a big leatherback turtle. And we come back later, 20 years later, when Michelle is 36 and has two young children of her own. And in the positive chapter, Donna, she now has a doctorate. She herself works at the university, and she's taking a group of other researchers from all around the Caribbean on that same beach, and they find a turtle. The twin chapter, the negative chapter, the hurricane just pounds the beach, rips up the sand, and she's huddling with her family in this tiny little town through the Florida hurricane, and when it's finally over, she goes out and looks at her beach, and it's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way the book works. That's the way it's going to be. And again, this is all based on enormous research of what people think is coming in different parts of the world.
And
Michelle, just to round it off, she responds as a scientist. She responds as a mother watching a mother turtle lay her eggs and a mother of her own children. And she also responds religiously, spiritually, as someone who is deep in her church, believes in the Creator, and wonders, what are we doing to God's creation? This book, Donna, is written for everyone. It's not just scientific facts. It's not polemics. It's stories that can reach everybody.
We live in a world where, within seconds, anyone can be connected to anybody. I had someone send me an email from Croatia saying how much they enjoyed the show. That blew
Good
me
for
away.
You.
I had no idea. I mean, how would I know that somebody was listening in from Croatia?
That's great. That's great.
So here she is, able to communicate with me because of technology. And I know with many young people, they have this desire to be able to make the world a better place. I think every young generation, to the best of my knowledge and experience, has felt pretty much the same way.
That's right.
Unless they have had a pretty ugly life, and then they don't know what to look for.
That's right.
You have gone to different environments, and then one of the places that you go to is China.
I found it interesting, China, in 20 years.
And in China, they are mimicking the West in so many respects, which I think is a big mistake. And they have, which isn't anything new, I mean, with the Cultural Revolution and the mentality that went along with that and all of the other things that followed. The younger generation is becoming aware, not much, but becoming aware that they must become educated so that they can have a positioning in life. And it is coming about because they have become, to a degree, capitalists. At the same time, they're following modalities that we have learned do not work.
Yeah.
And they are adopting those, and at the same time, they are upsetting their environment in a very big way. Now, you have a character, Zheng, who is just quite a fascinating character. Who did you base him on?
He is the one, good for you, Donna, he's the one real person in the book. And he just is in the story. He was a young Chinese kid, first in New York City, born in China, young in New York City, came up to a little rural town in upstate New York where his parents run a Chinese restaurant. I eat there once a week. And he graduated first in his class from high school, went down, as in the book, to University of New York, right in Manhattan, and he's working there today, and he reads my books, and he sent to me the peace character at the end of that chapter, the Chinese character that means peace. Mm-hmm. He sent that to me. So he is an extraordinary person, and utterly unique because he's so international. I mean, I live in pickup truck America here. Most of his high school classmates never left town, never left the county.
Mm-hmm.
And I admire Zheng because he looks out at the world. And I know from teaching in Norway and in Russia, those students are looking out at the world. And I know from teaching in America, we're not. We figure we've mm-hmm. got it made. We know all the answers.
And well, we're far from that.
We do.
We are just so far away from that. And I think there are many people in the United States that are quite concerned because of that.
Oh, absolutely.
The character Zheng. One of the things that you brought out, which I know is a fact relative to education, among the Asian people, education is very, very highly valued.
That's right.
The United States. The immigration of individuals through the country. I have Italian background. My father came from the old country, and it was very, very necessary that you be able to earn your citizenship to be a part of this country because
That's
at the
right.
time that he came over, there
That's
wasn't
right.
anything in Italy that really afforded it. And his father worked in the United States to save the money, so because my father was the eldest, so he could send his eldest son here. He couldn't send
wow.
any of the other kids. But he sent his eldest son. So
yeah.
that was a very good opportunity for my father, which he really did well with. However, this was an issue. Each phase of immigration, whether it was the Irish, whether it was the Polish, whether it was the Russian, it didn't make any difference.
That's
there
right.
always was a disdain for them because
yeah.
many of these people came from very, very poor environments. So
yeah.
they worked extra hard. And they, maybe the parents, the immigrants that originally came, didn't necessarily go to college, but they all wanted their kids to because
That's
they
right.
knew
Absolutely.
That it was important. And I think that the standards that you show about the Asian community, I know for a fact, because I've done interviews with different people over the years of different educational levels,
right.
and one was a man with a Sylvan education system. And he said, you know, we get so many parents that will come in here and say, my student is to be my son or my daughter is to be the
yeah.
best. And they will have them tutored so that they will go further. And
that's right.
that's the determination. This is your job. You're growing up. This is what you're supposed to do.
That's right.
And
it's
a
exactly
commitment.
Right.
It's a very intense commitment. So
yeah.
this is something that I think has been sort of taken away to a degree, and as you said, it's sort of easy. But all of these different portrayals, each one of these characters
yeah.
really wants to make a difference.
That's
right. Each and every one of them wants to make a difference. And when we're talking about the ocean, there's a statement that you have in here that is made by a Dr. Worthington, I believe.
Right,
your
right.
generation has got to rise to the occasion. It's got to rise to the challenge. First, you've got to demand a real future, and then you've got to build it.
That's right.
And, of course, this is related to penguins that they're trying to save.
Right.
And then Madeline, I don't know that that's
right.
Yes,
that's
it is
right.
Madeline. She said, okay, we will be glad to take over. We can rise to the occasion. And we're ready to build. But will they let us?
Yeah.
Will they let us?
That's right.
Those four words have caused more grief because people say, gee, we're not going to be allowed to do something. And that's one thing America has always stood for, is that you do have the right.
That's right.
To try. You have the right. Now, it may be tough going, but you do have the right to challenge whatever needs to be challenged and to do it better.
That's right.
And this
It's the combination of Yankee ingenuity, which we have tossed aside, and the commitment of the civil rights movement. We are going to build a better America. And we have thrown away that Yankee ingenuity, and the civil rights movement, it's been dormant for a long, long time. But we need to move on that scale, Donna. We truly do.
Well, I think it's mature individuals like you and like myself that have to be able to speak to the younger people so that they can know. If you don't have good examples, and that's part of what makes your book an interesting read, because you're coming from different paradigms, different cultural environments.
That's right.
We all get laden with baggage. I don't care who we are. When we come into this world, we have a family that may or may not be bigoted, that may or may not be skinny or fat, that may believe, you know, that this is good and that is bad. And to step away from those paradigms and to think for oneself takes time.
Yeah,
it takes being brought into the environment of people that think differently so that you learn the process of thinking, of analysis. This isn't something that we've automatically got. We don't push a button and say, hey, it's here. No, we have to earn it.
That's right. Good for you. That's absolutely right. And I think living in different cultures taught me that. When I lived in Russia, I was always looking for a topic of conversation in English for my students so they could practice their English. And often, Donna, I would ask them, why do you Russians do it this way? And then it would be my turn to learn as they all explained it to me. It's a lesson in a completely different viewpoint, and yet ultimately it's legitimate. It has its own sense to it.
One of the points that you bring out in your book, which being up here in Alaska, again, I can really relate to, and that is you bring out the information regarding the joint Norwegian-Russian Fisheries Commission.
Good for
and
you.
This was regarding codfish.
Yeah.
And cod, interestingly enough, they've decided to move all on their own more into Russian waters, and the Russians are very happy about it because they're getting buku fish.
That's They're following the colder water.
They're following the colder water, and this is happening in so many different parts of the world, which isn't all
that
unusual. Yeah, they are shifting. So we're going to find fish in different places. But what I wanted to bring out is that in Alaska, they have had one of the finest, most efficiently run, what I would say, conservation programs regarding fish. It really was a very tough thing to enforce. Because people always had the attitude, well, there's abundance of this. Well, the truth is you can overfish, which has happened, and we've been decimating so much of the population of the sea, and the way the fishing is done, these huge trawlers that clean up everything,
the
factory ships. So this is something that there has to be a change in mentality. So this agreement I was not aware of, and I was pleased to read about it. I know what they've been doing up in Alaska, and it has really made a difference, although I learned today from a client that there are fish that are coming into Alaskan waters that have never been seen before.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
There's all of these adjustments that are going on. So you touch on so many different aspects, and I think that your research is quite extensive. And being aware of the utilization of energy and being open to different options really is causing a very fast shift in the world at a pace because technology is advancing so fast. It just is mind-boggling what they're coming up with.
That's right.
We really do have to look at it because we've got almost 7 billion people on this planet, and it is slowly but surely being overwhelmed, so we need to change our ways of looking at food production. We have to change our ways of using energy. And when you talk about the Danish people, and what they have accomplished and done. What are the concepts regarding climate change, and what is on their agenda for making things even better?
Oh, it's extraordinary. Now, this was an agricultural country. I mean, I mentioned earlier Danish ham and Danish butter. Those were their exports. And it was in 1973 and again in 1979 when there were the two oil embargoes. We just ignored it. The Danes said, aha, we're not going to let this happen to us again. And at some point, the world is going to need something other than oil. And they invested, beginning in the late 1970s, into wind turbines, into clean energy engineering. And Denmark now leads the world. And they did it not alone, Donna. In the 1980s, when they're just getting this program going, the Danes and the Chinese working together developed and opened a university in about 1986 that would train clean energy engineers, electrical engineers. And, of course, that whole generation has now gone to work. So from the beginning, it made economic sense and it made international sense. Today, they're at about 20% of their national electricity, 20 to 25% comes from wind turbines. And, of course, they want that percentage to go up. But here's the extraordinary figure, Donna. 80% of the thousands of wind turbines in little Denmark, some on land, some in the sea, 80% are not big grid corporations. They're farms, they're businesses, and they're little towns, communities with their own wind turbines. Even on islands, there's an island where they put up so many wind turbines they had to run cables to the mainland so they could sell power. They were making more than they could even use. Mm-hmm. And so, and of course, people have jobs because they're building all the various components that go into these wind turbines, from ball bearings to the blades that are 50 meters long. So economically, it's extraordinary. You can ask any 80-year-old grandmother in Denmark if she has a pension. Is she worried about her pension? And she'll say, no, sonny, I invested in wind turbines 30 years ago.
And one of the points that you just made, John, that I think is very important, and I know we're just about out of time here,
okay,
is the fact that they are manufacturing.
That's it. All they're building. Factories.
They're manufacturing
jobs.
All the parts.
And that's what I want to see in this country, because it galvanizes the school system, and I'm a teacher, and American schools are in a coma. I'm sorry, but they are.
Mm-hmm. Guess
and not. It gives jobs by the tens of thousands. And Donna, humanity, the 7 billion you mentioned, we're going to need wind turbines and solar collectors. This is a manufactured product that humanity is going to need for the next century.
Mm-hmm.
That means lifetime careers. And it's the only economic engine that will lift America out of our recession. Detroit will never do it by making cars.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think I will disagree with you on one point. And that
okay, go ahead.
When you have a manufacturing process, it's just like Boeing.
Yeah.
When you have successful manufacturing, there then is the opportunity for literally thousands of other vocational venues to
exactly.
thrive and prosper. And so
right.
I would shift my description or words with what you have said into that
yeah.
venue. And that's where manufacturing built this nation. And as you said, the Danish people have become aware of it, found their venue. And I do think Detroit, if the people in Detroit became awakened,
that's right,
or awoke to the realities of need and stepped up to the mark, they
yeah.
could make a shift so fast that they easily, I think they could make it, but the thinking has to be there, the innovation has to be there, and the willingness to work efficiently and more effectively. And it's a big change. A lot of people aren't there. John, your book really encompasses so much more than just climate change and the oceans.
That's right.
Now,
that's the
you have
point.
A website and that is Woodgate International, and International is abbreviated INTL. Am I correct?
Yeah, WoodgateINTL.com.
And that's where people can find out more. You've written a number of publications, and I think that they have just got so much information in them. If you want a different spin in a palatable way that will give you pause and thoughts that perhaps you had never explored, I'd encourage you to check out John's book, Dr. John Slade's book, Climate Change and the Oceans. Dr. Slade, thank you so much for being with
you,
me today.
Thank you, Donna. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. It's wonderful.
Thank you, and much success on this book, and I know you've got another one in the wind, but we are going to take a break. We're taking a break now. This is Donna Sebo. Go to Woodgate International, WoodgateINTL.com, and find out more about this very successful author and the publications he's put out. This one was Climate Change and the Oceans. We're going to be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna, broadcasting from absolutely gorgeous Fairbanks, Alaska. And if ever you've heard anything about Fairbanks, and some of you are aware that I've been traveling up to this magnificent state of Alaska for a number of years, and Fairbanks is a place, it can be 70 below zero, you look out the window, and it's gorgeous blue skies and white billowy clouds, and you go, wow, and you step outside and you think your eyes are going to explode. Well, that's during the winter. It doesn't get that cold here that often, but it can get bitter up here in Fairbanks. But right now, spring is here in full grace, and I'm telling you, the Alaskans are out and about. They're just like those of us in the Pacific Northwest. When the sun shines, forget any commitments for anything else. We got to be out where the sun shines, and that's what they're doing right here in the fabulous area of Alaska. Okay, telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here is the worldwide toll-free telephone number. You can call in to 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. So give me a buzz if you'd like for me to chat. I had someone ask me, Donna, how do you do this? I mean, doesn't someone have to be in front of you to be able to get these impressions and this information? And my response always is, heaven's sakes, no. This is something, it's a discipline. Believe it or not, the development of mind skills comes with practice. and it is repetition. It's sort of like learning how to ride a bike. When you wanted to learn how to ride a bike, you had to get on the silly thing, didn't you? Maybe you were lucky enough to have training wheels on your bike, so you built up a little bit of confidence, but one day those training wheels had to come off, and you had to know that you could balance yourself well, and then all of a sudden it was yahoo, and then we were on the dirt bike specials or going down hills as fast as we could because it's exhilarating. Well, that's the way it is with developing mind skills. Frequently, when people want to learn how to develop intuitive talents, if they will focus on the strongest interest that they have, and they're willing to work with it and exercise it on a regular basis, like a physical muscle, your mental muscle expands and gains strength. And then the intuitive, the insightful process comes to you very quickly and very rapidly. So if you're a first-time listener and you would like to experience it, just remember when you call in to 888-815-9756, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, sit back, relax, and I will give you what I perceive. This is a mental skill. It is something that anyone, if they're interested enough, can develop, but it may express itself a little bit differently through you than it does through me. I meet people with all kinds of talents. By the way, I had said yesterday, I talked a little bit about dreams. Dreams are an extremely useful tool for developing your psychic ability. And I came across somebody's suggestions regarding certain symbolism in a dream. And I thought I would share some of this with you, but as I'm going through it, I want to make a few comments about different things. And I'll do it as I feel spontaneously inclined to do so. What if in a dream you had a rainbow? Well, for almost anyone that I know, a rainbow is an extremely positive sign. Why? Because it contains all the colors. It's vibrant. With people of Christian background, there has been along the emphasis about Noah and the flood, and at the end of the flood, there was this wonderful rainbow, which was God's promise that you would never go through disaster again like that. So this is something I can remember being taught when I was a small child. But rainbows also, like with the Irish, you have the little leprechauns with their pots of gold at the end of them. So it always portrays something very, very positive. And whenever you might have the experience in a dream, I mean, I've even been in places where I've seen double and triple rainbows, and the automatic response is, woohoo, this is really special. This is really very nice. It's very uplifting because of what has been passed along via legend and feeling. So when you have this kind of a visual in a dream, it can mean that, well, you're on a journey. Have faith in what is coming because you're going to be able to experience, if you will, that pot of gold, those blessings that perhaps you can't be aware of because of what you're going through at a moment. Now, what if in a dream you have snow or frost? Well, the first impression, obviously, is, gee, this is going to be cold. Well, it all depends on what that imagery is surrounded with and how it is affecting what you are experiencing in the dream experience. It could be that maybe things are just at a standstill for you, or that maybe you have allowed your emotions to be encased in a very cold shell. It all depends on a dream. One of the things about a dream's content, I didn't finish my sentence, it depends on the dream's content. The content means the colors, the feelings you have, the awareness of touch, hearing, your whole entire and sensory system is employed in a dream. And that's what you want to be able to write down. You want to be able to write down the feelings that you have. You want to be able to be honest about that. And remember, something my mentor told me, and I want to tell you the same thing. Whatever you experience in a dream, you don't add anything to it. You don't take anything away from it. You just state it as you have that dream experience. Rain. Rain can mean a number of things. Water typically in dreams represents a part of the spiritual self. And it could mean, however, dependent on your association with water, how you feel about water. It can be something that's very joyous. It can be something that's very depressing or oppressive. Again, dependent on the content of a dream. If the water is free flowing, then it can be very, very much an opening for you as an individual. Let me share with you an experience that I had. And I had this dream where I was in this very, very large building. And this building had this atrium type of area. And all of a sudden, I hear glass crashing to the floor of the building. And I look up, and here was this area of glass that had been right at the front of the building. And this water was coming through. And as the water was coming through, it was covering the floor. But the water that was coming through was not dirty. It was clean. And it was something where in the dream, I saw these repair workers or these carpenters, whatever they were. They said, oh, yes, that happened. And we're going to be able to fix that very, very easily. Well, in my particular experience at the time of what I was going through, I interpreted the dream that I had broken through a personal glass ceiling. And when the break occurred, it was unexpected, and the water coming through was showing me that this was opportunity for free-flowing motion. And the dream had a lot more to it. It was a very complex dream. But I'll never forget that particular aha of understanding that came into my space. So when you're having a dream experience, try to detach yourself from it emotionally. Maybe you'd consider it a nightmare. Maybe there is a feeling of apprehension. In a dream, you can have the past, the present, and the future all simultaneously. It happens. And I've worked with a number of people helping them to interpret their own dreams. I have a knack for this. This is something that I enjoy doing. Your dreams are a tool that you can work with to help you help yourself in the understanding of your own journey. Sometimes we don't feel like we're accomplishing anything at all. And yet in a dream, we may be shown that we've literally climbed a mountain and conquered it. But so often we're so busy in our lives, we're so integrated into what we're doing that we don't give ourselves the space to be able to recognize what we are going through, what we are growing through, so that we can go to our next level. So again, these are symbols, a tornado. Well, of course, a lot of people would say, wow, if you've got tornadoes in your dreams, that really means something bad. Not necessarily. Tornadoes contain a lot of power. They are spontaneous, and it could be a representation of a tremendous amount of energy that's going to have to be controlled. Otherwise, it could perhaps be destructive. See, it all depends on how you view things. We don't understand a lot about tornadoes. All we know is that when they come in, they can be very devastating. But if you stand back far enough, you can see that it is energy. It is all energy. And sometimes it's absolutely magnificently beautiful as it's coming together. Now, what it does afterwards, we don't understand why it takes the directions it takes. We don't understand tornadoes very much. We know a little bit about them, but not a whole bunch. So a dream again, what is the tornado looking like in your dream? Is it clear water? Is it full of lightning? What's happening? And again, these are just a few symbols. There's a gazillion of them. Also, one of the things I'd like to share with you, when you're doing dream interpretation, don't forget your cultural background. I have found so many times on a subconscious level, details and symbols come in from a cultural environment that maybe the individual doesn't realize that they really have a very strong association with. It can make a difference. And of course, if your dream is filled with a lot of sunshine and light, I think that that is pretty self-explanatory. But I just thought I would touch on that because I promised that to you when I was doing a show yesterday and we ran out of time. But this is just a little bit of information when it comes to dreams. It's so involved, but open up your mind. realize that you are a very, very special person, and your mind is going to be experiencing unique points of information, happenings, and when you can document it, it performs a discipline with the subconscious and the conscious self, allowing for a communication that sometimes is really worth its weight. Well, in gold, if you will. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, I've got a story about a woman that celebrates birthdays in the most fascinating way. And if I have some time, some wonderful information about butterflies. Otherwise, give me a call at 888-815-9756. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Called the Oprah of Radio by her listeners.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I'm hearing something in the background. There we go, it's disappeared. Okay, birthdays. Everybody has a birthday. Sometimes we don't like to celebrate birthdays. You know, as you get older, it's like, forget it. How many people do you know this is? Forget it, I never celebrate my birthday anymore. After I was 38, never again. Well, I have a wonderful, wonderful story to share with you about a lady. Her name is Barbara Cook. And the 6-0 was coming up. Woo-hoo! Well, she said 60. Oh, how can I be 60? Time for a birthday party, right? Well, she was happy with her life, but the idea of a traditional birthday party, 60, none of her other birthdays had affected her, but turning 60? Oh, that was not something she was looking forward to. She was feeling a little bit depressed. And she said, what can I do? What can I do for a 60th birthday that's going to make me happy? Well, Barbara found that she had really an awareness that one of the greatest satisfactions she had in her life was when she could help other people. And she happened to come across an article. Don't you love those serendipitous moments? I do. She comes across this article where a woman had invited friends to a birthday party and gave each of her friends $100. She said, I don't want you to bring any presents. And all of a sudden, Barbara goes, wow, what a cool idea. I want to do that on my birthday. So Barbara set up a birthday party. She had about 24 people that came to the party. And, of course, everybody celebrated by singing happy birthday and all of this, but she did something her guests were not expecting. She went around to each of them and gave them a very pretty envelope and said, "This is a gift for you." And in each of these envelopes, she had put a certain amount of money. And she said, "I don't have a lot of money, but I'd really like this other woman's concept. And I felt so good about this. There's only one stipulation. This is my gift." This is what she said to her guest. "This is my gift to you. What I want you to do is to take this money, make it grow, and I want you to do something good with it. So you do whatever you want, but I want you to do something good with it." Well, one of her guests just said, "Holy Joseph, I've never experienced this before. I don't know what to do." And she said, "This just boggles my mind. Nobody's ever handed me money and said, do something good with it. Just go and use it in any way you want." Well, one of her guests, whose name was Joanne, was just going through her mind. She said, "Wow, what do I do with this money that Barbara's given me?" As it turned out, her son was in her mind all the time. Her son, who was about 30 years of age, had had a terrible accident and had suffered a serious brain injury. And all of a sudden, it popped into her head. We can do something via the facility that our son is at, and we will just find out what they need. So they went in, they talked to the manager of the home where her son had lived for a number of years after his brain injury. And she asked, "What do you need here?" And so the facilitator there said, "We need linens." And she said, "Okay." So she raised enough money, plus the money that she had gotten as a gift. She had gotten money from other people to buy 14 sets of new linens for the facility where her son was located. And they were just blown away. Well, each of her friends had a special story to tell. One of them used the $60 to buy art supplies for someone in the family that they ended up in turn making greeting cards, which they sold, raising about $600 for a school that they wanted to assist. Another of her guests used the money to host a party at her home that raised $1,400 for a place for homeless kids. And here are all of these things that people were doing. It's capitalism at its finest. Taking a sum, putting it into action, reaping a result, and applying it for something that is really, really amazing. And you know what? There was one couple that had attended her party. They potted plants, sold the plants, making over $2,200. Then there was a donor that said, "Whatever they accomplish, I'll match it." They turned $120 into $4,400. It bought hearing aids for six children. So when they next got back with Barbara, they had a date 6 months after her birthday party. Do you know all of her friends, 24 of her friends, had ended up taking the amount of money that Barbara had doled out, which was $1,440. All of their efforts had reaped $23,265. An amazing story. And you know, she said, "I'm so excited. My birthday's coming around." She's going to be 61. And she said, "Good is still happening." And she said, "Other people are saying, I want to do this too. I think this is a great birthday idea." Barbara's final statement was, "My hope is that people would see it's not difficult to help others, even if you don't think you have much to give." And she got her birthday wish. Fabulous story. Well, we're out of time. Hey, tomorrow we're going to be talking about mystery shoppers. Great job if you love to shop till you drop. And then also, we're going to find out how we can avoid getting scammed. Bethany Moradian is going to be my guest tomorrow. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Innovation, we each have the opportunity to express it, to do it in our own special way. Be inspired. You're very unique. There's no one else like you on this planet. Be grateful that you have the talents that you've got, and know that your place in life will be as rich and as full as you want it to be. It worked for Barbara. Hey, you can try it yourself. This is Donna Sebo. I'll be broadcasting from Fairbanks, Alaska again tomorrow. Remember always, again, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy this day of life. It's a gift. Savor every moment of it. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.